Askachadi Sitarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakapa Jubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyebhacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. March 4th, 2016, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 10, Divisions of the Creation, Text 6. Tapasayedamanena. Vijaya Chatma Samstaya.
Vijaya Chatma Samstaya.
Virita Vijnana Balo.
Virita Vijnana Balo.
Naipadvayum Sahaspasa. Sahamspasa.
Tapasa.
By penance.
By penance?
He.
He.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Edhamanena.
Edhamanena.
Increasing.
Increasing.
Vidyaya.
Vidyaya.
By transcendental knowledge.
By transcendental knowledge.
Cha.
Cha. Cha.
Also.
Also.
Atma. Self.
Self.
Samstaya.
Samstaya.
Situated in the self.
Situated in the self.
Vivridha.
Vivridha.
Matured.
Matured.
Vijnana.
Vijnana.
Practical knowledge.
Practical knowledge.
Balaha.
Balaha.
Power.
Power.
Nyapat.
Nyapat.
Drank.
Drank.
Vayum.
Vayum.
The wind.
Wind.
Saha ambasa.
Saha ambasa.
Along with the water. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Long penance and transcendental knowledge of self-realization had matured Brahma in practical knowledge, and thus he drank the wind completely along with the water. Lord Brahma's struggle for existence is a personal example of the continued fight between the living entities in the material world and the illusory energy called Maya. Beginning from Brahma down to this age, the living entities are struggling with the forces of material nature. By advanced knowledge and science and transcendental realization, one can try to control the material energy, which works against our endeavors. And in the modern age, advanced material scientific knowledge and penance have played very wonderful roles in controlling the powers of the material energy. Such control of the material energy, however, can be most successfully carried out if one is a soul surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and carries out his order in the spirit of loving transcendental service. Tapasa yedhamanena vidjaya chatmasamstaya vidridha vijnana balo nyapadvayum sahambasa. Long penance and transcendental knowledge of self-realization had matured Brahma in practical knowledge. And thus he drank the wind completely along with the water. So yeah, we all were trying to control material energy. We're trying to control this body to keep it healthy and fit. We're trying to control our living environment, our home, our finances. We're trying to control the climate, our clothing, our heating and cooling systems, and so forth. We're trying to control other living entities, the plants, the animals, other human beings. We're We're trying to control the material energy. We're trying to get the material energy to be our servant. And this is the struggle. Struggle for existence, a continued fight between the living entities and the illusory energy. It is a constant fight. It's a constant battle, because as soon as you think you gain control, then you lose it. As soon as you've cleaned your house, it gets dirty again. As soon as you make some adjustment, then adjustment needs to be made over again. Something breaks, something goes wrong. The things you've done up till now that worked all of a sudden stop working or have the opposite effect. You don't know why. You don't know what to do. And so people are constantly asking, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? How do I solve this problem? What do I do? What's the right course of action? And here Brahma has this practical knowledge. Vijnana is this practical knowledge that he got from Vijaya, from transcendental knowledge. And that is the key to understanding. That practical knowledge comes from transcendental knowledge. Well, you can say, okay, the materialists, they also have a lot of practical knowledge without transcendental knowledge. And they do. And Srila Prabhupada's admitting that here in this purport. He's saying, in the modern age, advanced material, scientific knowledge, and penance have played very wonderful roles in controlling the powers of the material energy. Indeed, the reason that we are having this class over Skype, there are people here from literally all over the world. I mean, not Antarctica, I don't think, but most of the time zones of the world, is because of this control of the powers of the material energy done by advanced material, scientific knowledge, and penance. It's interesting here that Srila Prabhupada also mentions penance. I mean, I remember as a child, about 6 years old, going to the World's Fair and seeing a video phone. And we were told, oh, it'll just be there in a couple years. Well, it took a lot more than a couple years, it took many decades. But now we have it. We have video phone, and you can have a video conference with 10 people in 10 time zones. You can instantly send documents all over the world. I mean, we're just finishing a major publishing project, Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha, with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, and commentary also of many contemporary Vaishnavas. And this was done with very rarely having two people in the same place at the same time were working on the book. So, you know, I could just send an email to the artists and please just do this and this and this, and then they can just email me back a sketch or send it to me over Skype or fax it, and I can look at it and I can say, no, you know, just this over here, just this over there. And then they send me the pictures, right? I mean, this was impossible. I remember my husband telling me that in, I believe it was 1970, when he met with Srila Prabhupada, and he told Srila Prabhupada how computers could help print his books, because in the early part of the movement, you know, the devotees had first a mimeograph press, if any of you are old enough to remember what that is, for producing the Back to Godhead magazine. They had their own ISKCON press. And, you know, in the early days of printing, the old Gutenberg press, you had to put in the letters by hand. And each letter of each word, imagine, for each page, you had to put in by hand. You had to typeset, literally, and they called it uppercase letters and lowercase letters because they were literally in different drawers in a bureau, and, you know, the capital letters were in the uppercase and the small letters were in the lowercase, and you put them into this metal frame, and then you pressed down the machine to make your book, and you made one page at a time, and then you had to bind it. Very complicated. Anyway, the devotees had a little bit more sophisticated equipment than that, but I remember my husband telling Srila Prabhupada in 1970, or he was telling me about that, I wasn't there at the time, that with computers, that all this could be done automatically. And my husband said, Prabhupada's eyes got really big and said, oh, automatically? Right? And then we had, of course, the BBT did have sophisticated computerized technology for that time. Well, it's become so much more sophisticated, beyond comprehension. And this is the third major publishing project that I've done without an office at all, right? When we were doing the Learn to Read, we were able to produce altogether 900 pages of text and thousands of illustrations. Very complicated project, sound-enabled books, without an office. We had no central location. We had no, I mean, the only equipment I had was a laptop. And I didn't even have a base at that time. So, you know, no equipment, no permanent staff. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. It's beyond comprehension, you know, that one can fly in a plane to another part of the world and get there in a few hours. I mean, one time I flew from America to Mayapur just for 5 days. When I was a little girl, my grandmother, when she went overseas, she went in a boat. You know, 3-week journey to get there, 3-week journey to get back. So wonderful, right? Very wonderful roles, Prabhupada says here, right? Or we can have, I'm sure most of you have one of these little things. You know, this is a computer that's more powerful than, you know, going back 50 years ago, 40, 50 years ago, something that powerful didn't even exist. A computer had to be in a whole room. And, you know, this thing is voice activated and you can just talk to it and say, hey, tell me what the population is in Borneo, and it'll tell you instantly practically anything you want to know. So, very wonderful. Surgery is being done remotely, so you have a specialized physician in one place, and you buy a computer over the internet. He's seeing the surgery done in another place, and he's controlling that surgery with a robot that's doing microsurgery, going into the veins with a hairline. I just, beyond comprehension, how we are, as Prabhupada says here, very wonderful roles in controlling the powers of the material energy. And this is done with, Prabhupada gives two things. He says, advanced material scientific knowledge, and he calls it material. It's knowledge of the gross workings of matter. So the people doing all of these wonderful things beyond our comprehension, almost like mystic powers. Prabhupada talked about a German godbrother of his who said, I'm not interested in the mystic powers because modern science has imitated so many of them. They're obviously material, just gross matter. Right? Just manipulating gross matter. And penance, Prabhupada said. So I think it was Einstein who said that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. And earlier in the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, Krishna had told this to Lord Brahma. He said, I create, maintain, and destroy by penance only. A penance is an interesting word. In juxtaposition to tapaha, or austerity, or difficulty, penance particularly means that you're doing something difficult as compensatory, how do you say that, for something you've done wrong. So I do something wrong, and then I do something difficult to compensate for what I've done wrong. So why would Krishna say that he engages in penance? He never does anything wrong. But this is how we've translated this word, in penance. So all of us have done something wrong, or we wouldn't be in the material world. This material body we have is our prison uniform. And in order to do anything, we have to engage in difficult activity that is a kind of penance. So all of these wonderful things that are done by the material energy, still we find that, have we really controlled the material energy? This is a question. We note that all these wonderful, amazing things, and I've listed just a few of them that I work with all the time, but there are so many more that we could list. I mean, we could go on for days and weeks and months describing all the wonderful, wonderful ways, amazing, Prabhupada uses the word wonderful, that the material energy has been controlled. But we still see that there's a continued fight. This is done as a fight, and Srila Prabhupada uses, what does he say here? The material energy works against our endeavors. So it's in a fight, there's not the assumption, the implication is that there's not cooperation. If there was cooperation, you wouldn't need to fight. So the material energy is not cooperating with the scientists who are, by gross knowledge and great penance, working to control her. She's not cooperating. They're controlling her, but they're controlling her really by force. Of course, in one sense, she has to cooperate in order for them to do anything. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dhiratiya, because it's a divine energy. The jiva, although the jiva is more powerful than matter in a hierarchical transcendent sense, still, it's like saying the prisoner, the human being, is more powerful than the prison because human beings can create and destroy the building of the prison. And yet, when the government force is behind the prison, the individual prisoners are less powerful than the prisons. Although the jiva is higher than matter, still, when matter is organized by the divine energy, the jiva can only control it by the grace of the Lord and the grace of the material energy. So although it is the material energy ultimately in Krishna that allows this control, still it is a kind of force. All right, I'll allow you to force me. I'll allow you to do this. Sataputrabhu wrote a great deal on inspiration, how a lot of times these scientists, and we have this experience ourselves, they're doing all this penance, all this hard work to try to solve something, and then all of a sudden there's the solution given to them as a gift. So it's not really that by our cleverness and our penance, etc., we have conquered the material energy by our superiority. It's rather by our penance and our hard work, especially by our penance, we have gained enough sukriti that Krishna and the material energy says, okay, you can do this thing that you want. They award us doing this thing that you want. But it's a constant battle. And the way that modern scientific endeavor and penance have controlled the material energy has had an equal or greater downside. So for every way the material energy has been controlled, it's fought back in another way. You know, when I was a child, they had the Green Revolution, where through chemical pesticides and chemical fertilizers, the earth was forced to yield in great quantities. And they're doing this, of course, with animals. They pump the animals full of growth hormones and antibiotics and all sorts of things, which force the animals to grow twice as fast. But the downside is that people became ill. The land became depleted, the animals became depleted, people became very sick. So if you're becoming sick from eating your food, that's not exactly a good thing. Now, Hiranyakashipu was very expert at this. It's just recently finished the seventh canto, and Hiranyakashipu was forcing also the earth and the trees to bear in all seasons. I mean, here in Hawaii, things really do bear in all seasons. You really can buy avocados year-round that are locally grown. Not everything. Mangoes don't bear all year, even in Hawaii. And it was really nice going to the farmer's market yesterday and getting strawberries, local strawberries in March. That was really cool. I think of strawberries as a June crop. But throughout the world, you can get now, because it's you know, shipped in or flown in from different parts of the world, and so you can eat apples year-round and strawberries year-round and so forth and so on. So Hiranyakashipu was doing this. He was forcing. And his son noted, he said, the cures are worse than the disease. So to have the penance of accepting the ebbs and flows, the seasons of material nature, to take that as one's penance, you'll end up with a much happier life than the penance of controlling the material nature the way it is, the way it is being done today. So we see that the basic fabric of society is breaking down. The essential unit of society, family, is being destroyed. And people are no longer leading sane lives of regulated dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So the war in society, the anxiety in society is simply increasing with the way that we're trying to control the material energy. All right, well, we could say, let's just stop trying to control the material energy. No, let's just stop. And such is the view of the Buddhists and the impersonalists. They're going to say, you know, just stop. Don't try to control the material energy. Just whatever happens, just accept it. You know, and in fact, there's a lot of, you could say, support for this point of view, this way of living, in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Bhagavad Gita is talking about, Krishna speaking about, how one should be equipoised. Matras barsha stukantaya sitos na sukadukada agama payano nichas tamsatiksha srabharata. And be detached from honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, you know, whatever comes. just accept it. And this is, and find your happiness within, especially the fifth chapter, sixth chapter. Find your happiness within, and then you'll get actual freedom from all material misery, all miseries caused by material contact, Krishna says. Not by trying to manipulate the material energy, but simply by being happy within. So one can say, well, that is the message of the Bhagavad Gita, and there's a lot of support also for this point of view in the Bhagavatam, and so many spiritualists have taken this tact. Prahlad Maharaj said, the cure is worse than the disease. All right, we'll just accept the disease. And you know, there's something to be said for that. That's very much sattva-gun, or even Brahman transcendence. And certainly, such a position is far happier than those in the modes of passion and ignorance who are trying to control the material energy through advanced material scientific knowledge and penance. So there's no doubt that that's a superior path. But bhakti is interesting, because in bhakti, Krishna tells Arjuna, after telling him to be equipoise for honor and dishonor and heat and cold and so forth, and just say, you know, this is my energy, maya dakshena prakriti suyate satcharacham hetu nani nukanteya jagad viparivartite. Then he tells him, fight. He says, mama nusmaram yudyacha. So you think of me and be equipoised, and then get up and fight. And such an instruction really bewilders Arjuna. He can't figure it out at all. He keeps saying, you know, you've asked me to keep abominable activities distant by buddhi yoga, by the yoga of intelligence. And then you tell me to get up and fight. You know, fight. This is what we're talking about here. Fight. Prabhupada uses the word fight. Why should I fight if I'm detached? If success, failure, victory, or defeat, honor, or dishonor, karma pala tyaga, then you get shanti, Krishna says, 12th chapter. How do you get shanti? How do you get peace? Karma pala tyaga. You give up interest in getting anything. You give up interest in the fruit. Whether I get health or sickness, poverty or wealth, heat or cold, fame or infamy, honor or dishonor, friends, enemies, neutral, pain, pleasure, neutral. So why should I fight? We fight to get those things. We fight to get rid of pain and get pleasure. And people, they talk about people fighting cancer. And I'm going to fight the cancer, right? I'm going to be a survivor. And people put it in those terms. Why? Why get up and fight? Why care? Let Duryodhana rule the kingdom. And Krishna's in charge. Let him do it. I go into a trance of samadhi, meditate on Brahman, or even meditate on the spiritual world, and let Krishna run the world. So these seem to be contradictory. How interesting that Krishna wants the devotees, like Brahma, to control the material energy. Well, if you think about it, isn't that reasonable? This material energy is God's energy. It's Krishna's energy. It's his. Not only is it his, it's him. He's everywhere. Does Krishna want the material energy to act in such a way that people get more and more bewildered? Is that what he wants? Does he want all of the saintly persons to simply be in trance out in the forest? I mean, when Anga's son Vena became the king and it was causing so much trouble, the Brahmanas weren't going to directly manage the country, but they did interfere. They'd say it's our duty to help society. So throughout the Bhagavad Gita, throughout the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one has to be kind and merciful to all living entities. That is part of the process of self-realization. If one is thinking just about one's own liberation, of course, even the bhaktas who are bhajan and nandis are not thinking just about their own realization, because the bhajan of a prema bhakta transforms the world even without preaching. But the mood of the bhakta is not selfish. Liberation, the desire for liberation, is antithetical to the desire for love because it's selfish. It's me-centered. Therefore, if one's pursuing liberation and bhakti simultaneously, at a certain point, there's going to be an irrevocable conflict. So just giving up wanting to control the material energy and just staying equipoised, now that's not ultimately what Krishna wants. Krishna wants from that position of equanimity for oneself that one then reaches out to help others. For oneself, one doesn't need anything. He called happiness distress, honor dishonor. I mean, interestingly, honor dishonor, fame and infamy. We found Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seemed to be very concerned with fame and infamy. He didn't want to meet with King Prataparudra because he said it will look bad in our present political election. We have two major candidates who make a point of saying that they're not in the pocket of big business, that they're not being supported by big business, because that gives you integrity. Whether or not they actually have any integrity is another question. But they're making that point. We have integrity because we're not being supported by big business. So this was Lord Chaitanya's point. If I'm a sannyasi, but I'm consorting with the government, maybe I'll be maintained by the government. I mean, he was very upset that Kalakanta Vishwas asked Maharaj Prataparudra for money to pay off Advaitacharya's debt. And he was upset because Advaitacharya, the letter that Kalakanta Vishwas wrote to the king, said that Advaitacharya is the personality of Godhead and he has a debt. And Mahaprabhu said this is contradictory. But the other reason he said is you shouldn't, as a guru, you shouldn't be taking money and help from materialistic persons. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that Maharaj Prataparudra was not a materialistic person, that he was a great devotee. Just superficially, he was materialistic in the sense that he had the title of king. But yet, for the sake of reputation, he wouldn't associate with it. He says that one spot of ink on a white cloth is very prominent, and everybody will criticize me. And a lot of the reason that Mahaprabhu took sannyas was so that people would be receptive to his message and they'd see him as an authority. It wasn't, of course, the only reason. There are some inner reasons. But so he appeared very concerned about that. At the same time, when Damodar Pandit went to the Lord and said, "You're giving love and friendship to this boy who has a young, beautiful, widowed mother, and people will think that if you're friendly with the boy, you're going to be using the boy to get a relationship with the mother." And Lord Chaitanya said, "You know, you should go back to Bengal and keep all the devotees in Navadvip in line." And it was affectionate. But in that case, he wasn't concerned about reputation. Interesting. So he was concerned about reputation when he felt it was important for preaching, not for his own sake. Of course, he's God. He has unlimited fame. But the principle is there that the devotee is equipoised and isn't trying to control the material energy in order to enjoy it, because the material energy is not enjoyable. It's not enjoyable. It's not enjoyable for Krishna. It's not enjoyable for the jiva. It's simply not enjoyable. The material energy is maya. And maya means something that is not. It's not what it appears to be. It's an illusion. An illusion is not enjoyable. It doesn't give any kind of real enjoyment. If you drink illusory water, your thirst is not quenched. You know, you drink water in a dream. We've all had experience having some sort of sensory experience in a dream, but it's not satisfying. If you eat food in a dream, your hunger is not mitigated. You drink water in a dream, your thirst is not slapped. It's simply not enjoyable. It looks enjoyable. Interesting, in a dream, you know, the parts of the brain that experience sensory input are being stimulated. So the sensations, I told this before, that one time on a fast day, I was doing a near-jaw fast and I took a little rest. And I was dreaming that I was eating a big feast. I remember I was eating eggplant pakoras in my dream. And I was also drinking water, and I was taking, you know, drinking a cup and then a cup, and then finally in my dream I got a huge jug and I was chugging the jug, and I took another jug and another jug. And finally in my dream, and I got some lucidity in my dream, and I said to myself in the dream, why isn't this working? Oh, it must be a dream. And then I woke up. So what fascinated me about that experience was that in the dream, I had the physical sensations. You know, you have the cup, right? And you put the cup on your lip and you feel the cup against your lip, or perhaps you're holding it in the air and you're feeling it in your hand, the container of water, and then there's the sensation of water going into your mouth and going down your throat and into your stomach. There's a particular sensation. It has a particular texture. It has a particular taste. It has a particular temperature. And in my dream, I was getting sensory experiences of all of those things, as if it was happening. But it wasn't really happening. So it was, something was really happening in the brain. There was some on the subtle, on the mental level. I was drinking water, but on the gross level, I wasn't. And therefore, the body was feeling an experience of thirst continually, no matter how much water I drank. And this is what Krishna says. He says, lust is never satisfied, and it burns like fire, no matter how much fuel you put into it. So this illusion is not enjoyable. You can't enjoy an illusion. You know, someone the other day told me that they didn't have time for getting into a relationship. They were at the time of life when a relationship was needed for them. They said, oh, I don't have the time. And the person spends a lot of time watching TV and watching movies and playing video games. And I said, you're spending a lot of time on relationships, but all illusory relationships. Relationships that, yeah, they don't require work on your part, but nor do they give you any kind of satisfaction. So the devotee is not trying to enjoy the unenjoyable. And they are equipoised about this illusion. They're equipoised about it. I give this example all the time. Like if you walk through a shop where they're showing some movie, some film, to sell monitors or whatever, and you're walking past it, and you see it. You see that there's, you know, someone's being shocked or someone's embracing or whatever, you know, somebody's jumping from a helicopter to the roof of a building. And the people who are actually watching the movie, when someone jumps from the helicopter to the roof of the building, they go, oh! Right? But as you're walking in the store, you don't respond to it. Because not being absorbed in it, not being attached to it, you perceive it as an illusion. So it doesn't affect you. So the devotees have no interest whatsoever in trying to control an illusion in order to get something that's illusory. They have no interest in being the masters of something that is unreal, in the sense of not being what it appears to be. The devotees are interested in mastering, which they can never do entirely, of course, but in mastering their love for Krishna and their service for Krishna, their relationship for Krishna. That's what they want to be. One of the qualities of a devotee is daksha, expert. That's what they want their expertise in. They want to be an expert servant. That devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada begging to remain your useless servant. May I please remain your useless servant? So the devotees want to become expert at their service. They want to become expert at being Krishna's parent or Krishna's friend or Krishna's lover. They want to have expertise in that. But they don't want expertise at something that has no value whatsoever. But Prabhupada's talking about controlling the material energy can be most successfully carried out if one's a soul surrendered under the Supreme Personality of Godhead and carries out his order in the spirit of loving transcendental service. So in that platform, the devotee also wants to become expert at controlling the material energy. But then the devotee is seeing the material energy entirely differently. The devotee is not seeing the material energy in terms of an illusory promise of enjoyment. The devotee is not seeing the material energy, eat this, drink this, touch this, taste this, smell this, go here, do this, and you will be happy. Because the devotee knows that that's all a bunch of nonsense. It's not really happening anyway. The soul is simply a witness, Bhagavad Gita chapter 5 and 13. Because it's not really happening. But what the devotee wants to control, Prabhupada uses the word control, it's really not control in a forced way at all. The devotee sees that this is Daivyesha Gunamaya, this is Krishna's energy, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santa Sadayavadeyesha Vilokayanti. They see Krishna everywhere. They see the material energy as Vaishnavi, the younger sister of the Lord, who's born from Yasoda. Imagine. She's the daughter of Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj. How exalted is she? And she also, of course, appears in another manifestation from Vasudeva and Devaki. She's the wife of Arjuna. Or another manifestation, of course, as Durga, Sati, Parvati. She's the wife of Lord Shiva. This is Prakriti. This is the Lord's energy. His younger sister, Vaishnavi, as she tells Agopa Kumar in the last layer of the material universe, she says, I am the Lord's potency and sister, and you cannot attain liberation without my mercy. So we don't want to see her as an adversary. Prabhupada talks about how the police are an adversary to the criminals, but they're a help to the good citizens, at least in theory. Of course, it doesn't always work like that, but that's the idea. The idea is that if you're a good citizen, you go to the police for help. You work in cooperation with the police. So those of us who are trying to be good citizens, who have no desire to enjoy Maya, as long as you have a desire to enjoy Maya yourself, then you're not a good citizen. And the penance that one does, the long penance that we do, is not so much, you know, getting up early in the morning and being clean and eating only food offered to Krishna and being free from meat, fish, eggs, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. The real penance that we do, those are certainly all very important and should not be neglected. The real penance that we're doing is giving up this long-cherished desire, as Prabhupada says, to be the Lord of the material nature. She's not ours to be the Lord of. She's somebody else's. It's like someone who has a long-cherished desire to enjoy someone else's wife. It's not appropriate. So this is Krishna's energy. So the devotee has no desire to enjoy Krishna's energy. What the devotee wants to enjoy is the devotee wants to enjoy as part of Krishna's enjoyment. The devotee simply wants Krishna to enjoy, and whatever enjoyment they get is just simply prasad. Their happiness is Krishna's happiness. They're not trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. And then the material energy very quickly, very easily comes under their control. If you work for a business and your aim is to further the goals of the business, if you're not stealing from the business for yourself, then the facility of the business will be available for you. If you're enrolled in a university, which Prabhupada compares to being initiated, you're enrolled in a university, then the resources of the university are available for you. The professors, although they're superior to you, the professors, the heads of the department, they'll meet with you. They'll help you. Because you're a bona fide student. Now, of course, you have your area. If you're an employee, you may be an employee just, you know, in the finance department or the marketing department. So if you're in the marketing department, you have your certain area over which you have control for the purpose of the company. But you don't have control over the other areas. Now, Lord Brahma is the president of this universe. He has control over all of the areas of this universe. And each of us have our little area, where as a servant, we are supposed to control that for the good of Krishna. That's our job. If in the name of equanimity we walk away from our service, that's not bhakti. which is the whole Bhagavad Gita is about this. And to whatever extent we are, as here Prabhupada is giving two things, carrying out his order. Krishna is giving a general order. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, by my order, become guru and liberate everyone. Srila Prabhupada is giving a general order, go and preach this Krishna consciousness. If we're following his order, if our reason for dealing with the material energy is the Lord's order, and if our spirit is loving transcendental service, we just simply want to make Krishna happy. I get this little quote of the day, you know, they have a quote from Prabhupada that Prabhupada said on that day, someplace said or wrote on that day, and it was Prabhupada saying that if you just think of Krishna always as your friend and try to please him, then you'll know exactly what to do. And this is what's happening here. Lord Brahma is knowing what to do practically because he has purified his consciousness. Because he no longer tries to enjoy the material energy, he can perceive the material energy as it really is. When you perceive something how it really is, you know how to work with it. Because he not only no longer wants to enjoy it for himself, but because he wants to use it according to the Lord's order, in a spirit of affection, a spirit of love, a spirit of making the Lord happy, then everything becomes clear to him what to do. Such an important point. So back to the beginning, we want to know what to do, how to become happy, what decisions to make. As soon as our mood is loving Krishna, as soon as our mood is what is Krishna's order, as soon as our mood is our own, is detachment of our own self, from our own enjoyment of something that's not enjoyable anyway, then everything is revealed as the sun lights up everything in the sunshine. And therefore you see that the great devotees of the Lord are able to control the material energy, and Prabhupada uses the word control. But I would say, notwithstanding the fact that Srila Prabhupada himself is using this word, control the material energy, that it's more like a cooperation. You more that you work with the material energy. Because the material energy, being Vaishnavi, wants you to control her in Krishna's service. We see Maharaj Priyavrata, he created a second sun. How amazing. Amazing. Maharaj Ambarish, in one sense, displayed more mystic power than Durvasa. Prahlad Maharaj displayed more mystic power, in a sense, than Hiranyakashipu. Without, Prahlad Maharaj didn't do 100 years of penance and keep his life air circulating in his bones. And he didn't have to do that. He just loved Krishna. And Hiranyakashipu had all these benedictions. But it was Prahlad who couldn't be killed. And not Hiranyakashipu. He was killed. Prahlad wasn't. So who had better control of the material energy? Prahlad or Hiranyakashipu? Ambarish or Durvasa? This is the real... How ironic. If we really want to control the material energy, then we act in harmony with the Lord without a desire to control the material energy. And of course, there's degrees. So even people who are somewhat with the order of the Lord and somewhat in loving service, they get all these subtle powers which are much greater than the gross powers of the modern scientists. I mean, the Brahmastra of the Shastra could hit just one target. It wasn't blind. The subtle powers, I mean, you know, I can send you a document instantly, but I can't teleport. You know, the yogis with their subtle powers, they dip into a river in one place and they come up in another place. They use the river as a subtle highway. I was just reading Jiva Goswami Gopal Champu yesterday. He was saying that the Jamuna is the Shishumna of the Lord, that Vrindavan is the Lord's body and the Jamuna is the Shishumna, which was really cool. So those who are expert at controlling the material energy are in proportion to their degree of not wanting to enjoy the material energy. and in proportion to their degree of seeing the material energy as Vaishnavi. And then basically it's a personal relationship where one is saying to Vaishnavi, my dear Parvati, my dear Prakriti, you are the energy of the Lord. I want to do this service for the Lord. Please assist me. Please cooperate with me. Of course, externally, it may still look like a fight. Prabhupada was in a fight for the property in Juhu and so forth, but that's lila. It's not this struggling with the force of material nature that is working against your endeavors constantly. It doesn't feel like that anymore. Like Krishna's killing the demons and the cowherd boys, and they just think it's a game. Oh, there is a gatsura. Oh, looks like a cave. Let's go. What's that smell? You know, let's just go in. Oh, Krishna killed the demon. So this is the irony. As Jesus Christ said, those who want to find their life will lose it. Those who want to lose their life for my sake will find it. Those who put themselves last go first. Those who put themselves first end up last. This is the irony, because we're dealing with a reflection. So you want to control the material energy? Stop trying to control the material energy. Stop trying to enjoy the material energy. Carry out the order of the Lord. Have a mood of loving service for the Lord. Take your pleasure in your service to the Lord instead of in an illusion. And then you'll see that the material energy works with you. Works with you, and whatever so-called fight and whatever so-called struggle that's there, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, just becomes part of the pleasure of service. So I went a little longer than I usually do. If anyone has any questions or comments.
But yet, in our service, it certainly appears as if we have to try to manipulate material nature in one way or another. We're not trying to control it for our own pleasure, but we're trying to manipulate it in some way in our service to Krishna and Guru. At what point do we decide if the material nature isn't doing what we want it to do, that Krishna just doesn't want it? Because we know that one of the causes of fall down is over-endeavoring. At what point do we determine if we're just over-endeavoring, Krishna doesn't want this, move on to something else?
This is a perpetual question.
You know, perhaps just giving up.
Yeah, I remember Jadarani talking to me about this decades ago. The perennial question that when there seems to be a big block, I mean, how did Prabhupada put it here, right? What did Prabhupada say? Working against our endeavor. So when it seems that the material energy is working against our endeavor, at what point, when do we say, all right, this is a test, this is an adventure, I have to find another way to deal with it, and I'm still going through with my original plan, and when do we say, okay, change plans completely? Abandon this completely. I mean, you think about Srila Prabhupada in Jhansi. Prabhupada abandoned it. In Juhu, he fought. Right? In Jhansi, he backed away from it. I mean, he fought a little bit for a little while, but then he backed away, left. He abandoned it. In Juhu, you could say, well, there was no deities in Jhansi, but Prabhupada installed the deities in Juhu, he said, as a way of keeping the property. He installed the deities long before they could be properly worshipped. And he fought and fought and fought and fought and fought until he was victorious through so many obstacles. So how do you know? You have a particular goal, right? I have this particular goal in service. We want to build a temple. We want to publish a book. We want to be married to this person. We want to travel to Florida. Whatever, you know, go to some big devotee festival in Florida. Whatever our particular goal in service is. And there may be obstacles. The ticket costs too much money, whatever. And, okay, do I find a way to control the material nature to eliminate the obstacles, or do I abandon the plan? That's the question, yes? Did I get your question right?
Yes, that's the question. That's definitely the, you got it. That's the question.
Okay.
Perfect.
This is, it's a perennial question. So let's first go back to the verse itself, where the, look at this, long penance and transcendental knowledge of self-realization had matured Brahma in practical knowledge. The way to get practical knowledge of, do I keep this goal and simply work at eliminating the obstacles, or do I abandon it or go to a different goal? How to get that practical knowledge comes from inner clarity. You need to see things as they are. The reason we don't know what to do is our inner consciousness is cloudy. Right? It's like my father said, it was, he was 19 before he realized he needed glasses, and then all of a sudden he realized he had been seeing the world fuzzy all that time. So the, this vision of transcendental knowledge, premanjana charita bhakti vilochanti, or om agyana timirandasya gyananjana. The eye is smeared with knowledge and love, and then you just know. As Prabhupada says, the sun lights up everything. One knows one's duty. You just know what to do. Because you see things clearly yourself. So the best answer for this and any other question of perplexity in dealing with the material energy, but this is a big one that, that we ask over and over and over and over and over again, is I need inner clarity. I mean, you can do it through, you know, some sort of risk assessment and all that kind of stuff. There's an interesting book that I read, a fascinating book, written by some of the top management authorities in the world. I mean, these are people who teach management at MIT, right? They're teaching at MIT. These are people who command, you know, $100,000 for an hour of speaking.
Wow.
And, yeah. And these, it's written by, I think, three people, and they all became Buddhists. You know, they were Caucasian Americans, so they became Buddhists. And they came up with, they wrote a book about, which I read as a model for what we could perhaps do from a Krishna conscious perspective, about how do you decide what to do. And they talked about thinking, feeling, and willing, and connecting each of those to, of course, being Buddhist, they're impersonalist, but connecting each of those to kind of universal knowledge. So you go out and you get sensory information. You know, you. I might even be able to. Actually, I probably could. I could share my screen and show you, because I did some adaptation of this for in a seminar that I've taught to devotee leaders. Let me just bring this up for you. Okay, just give me a minute here. Sorry, I didn't expect anybody to give me this question, so. Such a nice visual, I might as well show you. Okay, so let me go here. I'm going to share my screen. Do you need, do I need to work with you?
I don't know.
Ramanand, I think you have to give me permission as the presenter to share my screen. Okay, can everybody see this?
No.
Can everybody see it?
Yes. It's loading.
Okay.
There you go. Now you see it.
Okay, so this is the principle that we're reading about in today's verse, the interior condition of the intervener. To have your interior consciousness right. It was Brahma's interior consciousness that gave him this practical knowledge. So here we have this model, which again was developed by the Presence Singh Institute. And they give you several steps. So the first step they call initiating. You stop and listen to others and to what service you are called to do. Again, I've adapted this. So this is sensory perception. You take the time to notice what's going on. What are other people saying? You get input from others, and you get a real sense of what is your service. What is the Lord asking you to do? What is Guru asking you to do? And you observe. You get a sense of what is the system. And in this presentation, we have a lot of quotes from Srila Prabhupada, how he operated this way also himself. And then this, they put this at the bottom of the you. You really connect with Krishna. You're not simply observing and connecting. So these first two steps, you observe, you connect, and then you make sure you're connected with Krishna. Now, obviously one wants to be connected with Krishna throughout the process. But we also have this as a distinct step through, you know, deep chanting of japa and kirtan and puja and study. Really seek to understand the Lord's will. And then they suggest that you do something on a small scale. You test on a small scale. And I had some negative and positive experiences of this with the recent book that I was recommended to work with someone, and I just immediately worked with them on a large scale, and it was a mess. And I had to pretty much throw out everything that they did after, you know, some expense and trouble. And after that, when I went to work with someone, I first tested it on a small scale. So test something on a small scale as a prototype. And then expand and go fully into the service. So pay attention to all of these. So here we're going to go through the steps. First of all, have an open mind, a mind that's connected with Krishna. So find out what people are talking about. Find out what other people have to say. Get the opinions and the views of others. And have an open mind. Don't be attached, I have to do this in a particular way. Okay, what do? Push through this obstacle, abandon the project. What do you have to say? What's your view on this? Then open heart. What's motivating people? What's driving the situation? You know, you want to open a temple, you want to move a temple. What are people thinking? And here, what are they feeling? What's their drives? What's their motives? How could what I want to do affect my Krishna consciousness and other people's Krishna consciousness? And an open heart to connect not only to Krishna's devotees and to the whole time, place, and circumstance situation, but to be connected with Krishna. And this requires openness that I don't know. And depend on Krishna to reveal what to do, making sure it's collaborated by Sadhu Shastra and Guru. What's the meaning of what I've learned? You know, I can do the research. So here I'm doing emotional research, here I'm doing mental research, here I'm doing intellectual research with my open mind, I'm doing emotional research, emotional intelligence with my open heart. And now I'm having my open heart to the Lord, to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And from that basis, then I can decide, let me test. Let me test something. So let's say you think, I have this obstacle, how could I get rid of the obstacle? Well, you make a small test and see what happens. Is it successful? And And at this point, I also give the advice, you know, the thing you're going to test, is it moral, is it legal, is it ethical? Is it in line with Guru Sadhu Shastra? These are the questions to ask. You know, maybe I could break through this obstacle in a way that's immoral. Well, then I'm not going to do it. Maybe I could break through this obstacle in a way that's illegal. Then I'm not going to do it, generally speaking. So you need to have a little test. How does this obstacle respond if I do a little bit of this before you throw lots of time, energy, money, manpower into something? Right, if you want to start a new temple in some place, first you rent a place. You get a little, you know, first you talk to the people there. You get a sense of what's going on. You figure out their drivers, their emotions. You connect with Krishna. And then you try a little one, see how it works. Get a little rented room. Does anybody come? And then depending on the success of your prototype, then you expand. And then you go fully ahead in whichever direction. Or you may have to go back, if your prototype doesn't work, you may go back to the beginning of the system and start over again. Right, and this is from Prabhupada's purport. 719, he says, according to one's attitude, Krishna becomes one's direct advisor. Or Krishna becomes unknown according to one's receptiveness. So this is what we want. We want Krishna to advise us. But that depends, this is exactly today's verse, on our receptivity. And here we have again this you, the open mind, the open heart, and the open will. As to what is the will of the Lord. So is that all right?
Very nice, thank you. A lot of nice points. Just a couple.
Anybody else?
Is this a new seminar you're finding it in before you're leaving us?
No, this is something that I've never taught it. Did we stop sharing my screen? I hope. Yeah. I've never taught it remotely. This is something that I teach in person. It's really a workshop. It's a 3-hour workshop that I've taught. How many times have I taught it? I don't know, maybe 4 times. Mostly I teach it to leaders. And that's part of a workshop on what's called environmental scanning, or being able to adjust your programs as to the needs in your environment, and to be able to sense upcoming trends and respond to them appropriately. I mean, the seminar is taught not really from a personal perspective, but more from a major project perspective, although it certainly also is applicable to a personal level as well.
Yeah, when Narhari asked that question, I wouldn't have a clue how to answer it.
So
that was great.
I think we've also seen that sometimes the answer is yes, but not now. You know, sometimes when you hit an obstacle, it's like, okay, I've got to go get some more tools. So sometimes, you know, the way you get from here to here is you got to go over here and get some more tools and bring them back to here, and then you can go forward. You know, you're trying to do something and you see, okay, I need to take a course. I need to study something. So you stop, you go over here and you get something. You bring that back, and then you can go forward. Also, sometimes the way to get from here to here is here. Okay, we could have one more question.
Mother Amy, can I just ask just real quick? I know it's a superficial question, but neither Srila Prabhupada's purport or you addressed what is the verse talking about? What is drinking the wind and the water?
Well, let's look back to the previous two verses. So go back to verse 4, and here it says, Brahma thus engaged in penances for 100 celestial years and applied himself in devotion, so he purified his consciousness, which is what we were just talking about. Then text 5, he saw that both the lotus on which he was situated and the water on which the lotus was growing were trembling due to a strong, violent wind. So, okay, he had the blessings of the Lord, he'd be able to create, he had his duty to create, and he ran into a problem. He ran into a problem that there was this huge wind that was shaking the lotus in which all the planets were situated. And it was shaking the water out of which the lotus was growing. What should he do? Should he abandon creation? Do something else? How is he going to deal with this? So because in today's verse, of his long penance and transcendental knowledge and devotion, because of that, he had the clarity. He had the inner clarity to know what to do practically. Oh, that's what I should do. I should drink the wind in the water. The solution became apparent to him because of his connection with Krishna, because of his penance, because of his inner clarity. He understood what to do, and he came up with the solution that was not necessarily an intuitively obvious solution. If I had a strong wind blowing, I wouldn't think my solution was to drink it. And we could have talked about that. That would have been a very different class. How sometimes the way to deal with a problem is to absorb that problem into yourself. Sometimes the way to deal with obstacles is to drink them, to drink the very obstacle. It reminds me of a story I read. This is, again, a very different topic that we could have discussed, where this man was rejected, I don't know, by a girlfriend or a wife, but he was rejected because the lady of his life rejected him and left him. And he was wondering how to deal with it, and he decided that he was going to seek rejection. Instead of trying to counter rejection, and you know, he would actively seek it. So every day he would do things or say things that were likely to be met with rejection. He made it into a kind of game. He would ask strangers for rides. You know, he would ask people to give him things or do things for him where there was a very high likelihood of them refusing. And he gave himself points every day for how many rejections he got. Within a very short time, he found that he was no longer adversely affected emotionally by being rejected. You know, like the yogis, in the summer they surround themselves by fire, in the winter they go into cold water. They go into the very thing that's causing the suffering. They don't try to defeat it. You know, in the 16th chapter of the demons, they try to defeat the cause of their suffering. They try to neutralize it. They kill their enemies. So the general idea, if I have an obstacle, I destroy it. Or I find, what do they call it, a workaround. You know, I destroy the obstacle, I blow it up, or I go around it. So in this case, Brahma went really quite through it and had the obstacle go through him, into him. That is not always appropriate, but sometimes that's the appropriate way. I have a friend of mine who says that the way he counters pain is by putting his full meditation on the pain, examining it. And the pain becomes simply some interesting sensation. Again, not always appropriate, but it is one of many interesting ways of dealing with difficulty, and this was the way that was revealed to Lord Brahma from within because of his proper consciousness. So thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai.